Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Scientists and Tech, a mini-series on DTNS. I'm Dr. Nikki Ackermans, and today I talk to Dr. Susan Lemberg, a fellow neuroscientist who works at Charles University in the Czech Republic. She studies teleportation in rats, or rather, she tricks rats into thinking they've been teleported. She measures their brainwaves with electrodes to figure out how exactly these basic brain functions work. So please tell us your name and why you're here, what you do.
Okay, so I am Susan Lemberg, and I am currently a postdoctoral researcher at Charles University in Belgium, in Czech Republic. And I work on, figuring out how brain activity in rats relates to them perceiving their environments. And I hope to learn something about, learning and memory and how memories are formed and stored and recalled.
That's very cool, and that's why I invited you here. Can you give us a very broad overview of how a typical experiment would go with you and your rats?
Okay, so for a typical experiment, we try to identify different memory states by looking at different groups of cells that are active in specific places and specific environments.
In the brain.
Yeah, in the brain, in a brain area called the hippocampus, which is sort of, you can think of it as sort of an integrating center where you have your sensory inputs, like anything going on around you, with memories that you might have already stored, come together and form like your working memory. Mm-hmm. That's where we record from. And we record specifically place cells, which are cells that are active in a particular location in a particular context. So a cell might fire, in the right corner of a box in the arena where we have the rats, walking around.
So like if you come home and you're in your kitchen, there's a cell that fires for the kitchen cell, sort of.
Yeah, or, at the sink, near the door, near the...
Okay.
Somewhere else. And in someone else's kitchen, they would fire in different places. And of course, it takes you a little while to build up a collection of these cells. So they do play a role in navigation as well. But that is not specifically what we use them for. We use this property of these cells that they, are, for example, active in one location in context A and another location in context B, or not at all in context B.
So how do you start to look at this in rats?
Well, we first make them familiar with different contexts. And I know this sounds a little bit abstract, but we basically put them in an arena, which is a 70 by 70 centimeter box, where they just get to walk around and explore. And we give them little cookie crumbs to make sure that they will keep exploring for 10 minutes, because otherwise they will get bored. And we have a context A and B. defined by different light conditions.
Okay.
Which means that later on we can, you know, switch between these contexts while the red is in the arena.
So you have like a bright box and a dark box, kind of.
Yeah, in this case we have one with lights along the top of the box, around three sides, and one with lights along a circle on the bottom of the box.
Okay.
A little light on the side. So it doesn't really matter what the specific boxes look like as long as they're different.
Sure.
And that means that we can switch between them while the red is in there.
Okay. So you flip a switch and you change basically into a different setting. And
exactly.
And so during your experiment, you're trying to see what happens in their brain when you flip that switch.
Yeah. So we call that teleportation because
cool.
Right. But yeah, it basically involves flipping a switch. But because the reds are familiar with A and B as being separate spaces, so we kind of trick, right? Because they're familiar with them being separate, we can switch this map, this constellation of cells that is specific for A or B from one condition to the other by switching the lights in the box, right? So what happens is that the cells in the hippocampus can switch conformation or activity pattern rather almost instantly. And there is a little bit of instability in the network when this switching happens. And this is what we are particularly interested in. There are very brief periods where, say, the wrong memory activation state for this context is active, like when it is not supposed to be. And we are very interested in, you know, what is going on there. So one, because we want to figure out, like, you know, how does the hippocampus do this? How does it help distinguish between different contexts?
So how are you seeing the hippocampus do this switch? Is this in live in the rats, or how do you know that this is happening?
Oh, yes, I totally skipped over that. Sorry. So we have our reds implanted with...
I know for you, it's just everyday practice. So
it almost gets boring at some point. Almost. The best job in the world, right? But yeah, we have electrodes implanted in the hippocampus where we can record firing of those cells. So when a cell is active, it starts making action potentials, and those are electrical signals that we can catch with our electrodes.
So is that similar to like when a human is getting an EEG where they have this like cap on with the electrodes and then you see like these colorful things light up like in the movies? Is that kind of what the rats have on, sort of?
Yes, but fewer blinky lights.
Yeah. Smaller brain.
So the principle is very much the same, just that with a human EEG, you have these electrodes on the outside of the head, on the skull, right? And they're quite large. So they catch activity of very big groups of cells all at the same time. And we have very small electrodes that go through the skull and really inside the hippocampus, which is sort of a deeper brain area. Mm-hmm. In the rat, it's about, you know, 3 to 4 millimeters deep.
So it's a very specific target to hit when you're implanting those. And so if I understood correctly, what happens is when this area that you're looking for gets activated, it creates electricity, when you say like action potential, and that lights up this electrode and makes an image or like a pattern on a screen for you to see, right?
Yeah, lots of small blips. And we typically listen to it rather than looking at it.
Okay.
Because it's easier to hear the patterns, and you get this, yeah, very distinct popping pattern where you can say, okay, now I am where I should be.
Interesting.
Because you hear all these cells being active.
So how do you work with this kind of data?
Okay, so first we need to, basically the first step after having recorded it, so we, you know, store it on a computer, do some filtering. The first step is to try to find within all this popping and crackling, all these little blips that we find, to separate them into individual cells.
Wow, so, you can do that?
And it's with a very clever idea based on our electrode layout. So we did not invent this. This is an invention from the 1990s, right? But it's a very smart idea. So our electrodes actually have four little wires next to each other. And you can think of it as a microphone. So,
okay.
Let's imagine a room where we have lots of people speaking all at once. Sometimes some people are quiet, sometimes others speak, right? Just like a party.
Yeah.
And also imagine that everybody has the same voice.
Okay.
Because all action potentials, at least from the cells that we're looking at, they look basically the same.
Okay.
So if you have one microphone in the middle of that room, it's going to be very hard to figure out who is speaking at which time, right? But if you have a group of them, like four of them, like our four little wires, then if you record at the same time from all four of them, you will be able to distinguish those different voices based on how far they are from each of those four microphones. Mm-hmm.
So like this one's coming from the right, this one's coming from the left.
Yeah, because it's a little bit louder on the rightmost microphone and a little bit softer on the leftmost and something in between on the other two. So that's how we can separate, you know, these different individual cells from each other, because not all of the cells in the hippocampus are place cells, and we care mostly about
the place cells. You don't care about what the other cells are doing.
Yeah, not in this particular context. Like they do interesting things in their own right, of course.
Of course.
but for my research, I care particularly about those place cells. And then to see if they are place cells. So once we figured out, okay, this is one individual neuron, because all the spikes, when we plot them, basically in sort of a 3D or 4D plot, based on what we find on those four wires for each electrode, right? They sort of tend to clump together if it's from one neuron, because those neurons don't move.
Right.
They stay where they are. After we've identified our individual neurons, we then match it up with a tracking signal. So we also have a little light, a little LED on the red that tells us where the red is within our arena.
Okay.
Because for a cell to be a place cell, it has to do the place cell thing, right? It has
the
to
location.
Fire in a particular location and not everywhere else. So that's why we also record the location. So that's very much the first step, like finding out what different cells
how they match.
And how does it match with activity? Are they place cells, yes or no? And then I'm particularly interested in the ones that, show different activity in context A and context B. And that will be most of them. But
the teleporting ones.
Exactly. So first you want to have, you know, two different maps, two different constellations of cells that do something different in A and B. And then you can see, okay, how does a brain or a hippocampus switch from A to B?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Broadly, what was your base hypothesis and did it come true, or do you maybe not know yet?
So I have been particularly interested in not just those instant switches, like the teleports I told you about earlier, but also what happens when you very slowly change the lights from
interesting.
And get mixed inputs, like contradictory inputs.
It makes me think about Star Trek when they like slowly fade away.
Yeah, right. And you might be half on the starship, which is very familiar to you, half on the planet, which by that time I assume is familiar enough to you. What kind of brain activity do you have? Does your map just hold on to wherever you came from for as long as possible and then shift all at once? Or do you get a sort of mix? Or do you get, you know, very brief activation from one context and then from another and then from one and the other? And
right. So what has been the trend, if you're allowed to say?
So far, it's about half of my animals do switch these maps. I'm currently working on figuring out exactly how in detail what happens in time. And about half of them don't, which is particularly weird.
And frustrating for you. So is it like personality based? Like some people hold on, or some people, here we go, anthropomorphizing the rats, but some of them hold on to the past and some of them jump into the future, if I dare to go that far?
We don't really know how conscious this entire process is.
Right.
The switching between maps happens on a pretty fast time scale. It's locked to the theta wave in the hippocampus, which is just a certain activity pattern that this brain area likes to make.
How fast would this go?
That's about 125 milliseconds.
Oh, so yeah.
So I am not sure, and I don't think anyone knows yet, how much of a conscious process this is.
Yeah.
It's possible that, you know, you need to be stable for a while in one state and then it becomes like, oh, yeah, I recognize this, right? Or an active conscious memory recall that we don't know. We also have not been able to, you know, figure out a way to have the rats tell us by saying, make one context, you know, more fun or more scary than another. But we can see from their behavior, you know, when do they start changing their behavior and when do they start changing their brain activity, right?
Okay.
So it's very hard because, well, you can't really ask them. Learn to speak.
Next rat. Job, invent a rat translator.
Exactly. So that makes everything quite difficult. But yeah, you can do these kinds of experiments with people as well. I'm not entirely sure what the results are of that. I know people have tried, but humans are also a lot harder to fool. So
pros and cons of rat work. So is there some kind of really fancy state-of-the-art technology that you would love to integrate into your programs to get super cool science, or are you guys already at the top of the field?
So like I said, the electrodes we use are quite classical and old.
1980s, yeah. Vintage.
That doesn't mean that they're not very useful, right?
Right.
So nowadays with, you know, electronics becoming much more miniaturized, we also have electrodes, I don't personally use them right now, but they are available electrodes with very, very dense contacts on them. So you have like one electrode that can record from hundreds or thousands of neurons at the same time.
Cool.
and you can separate them, and they're quite long, so you can actually record, you know, a whole bunch of brain areas at the same time by sticking this very thin needle with all these teeny tiny contacts on them through it. So yeah, I am very excited to have my hands on them. Also, because it comes as sort of a, these things are called neuropixels. And
that's a cool name.
Right?
Makes sense, yeah.
They use some very clever optical technology that I'm not able to explain properly here. But if you want to, you know, definitely look it up. They're very, very cool. And they come in this sort of plug and play out of the box system. So you don't actually have to build the whole neurophysiology lab. You just need a fast laptop, the box and the electrode and your
so you just go. USB a rat into your laptop and ready to go.
Yeah, I think it uses HDMI, but otherwise basically right?
That's amazing.
So that is very exciting as someone who loves electrophysiology. The other very exciting thing is all the optical imaging that is available. It's also become sort of a standard in the field.
How does that work?
So in those cases, you have some sort of fluorescent molecule encoded in your neurons. So they have this molecule in there and it changes.
They have that like on their own. They're genetically modified or they're born.
They're genetically modified. So these are, all constructed molecules that, you know, versions of them might exist in nature, but typically not in the neurons in a mouse or a rat.
Okay.
And these are voltage or calcium sensitive. So that means if you have an action potential or after an action potential, you get this release of calcium inside the cell.
Okay.
The cell will actually light up.
Wow. Like, how do you see that though?
By implanting teeny tiny microscopes on your animals.
Okay. I've heard of this. Actually, the lab next door to me does this. What are they called again?
They're called miniscopes.
Miniscopes.
Mini-microscopes.
Mini-microscopes. That's cool.
And it is very, very cool. Our lab has been trying to set that up, but everything is harder to do in rats than it is in mice. So
why? You'd think they're slightly bigger, it'd be a little bit easier.
Yeah, but they're also, I don't know, something in them makes it harder also to make like a genetically modified rat than a genetically modified mouse. And I don't know why. Basically, ever since CRISPR was invented, we've been getting lots of genetically modified rats only. Before that, it was a lot harder to do.
Just through like breeding?
Yeah. Mm. And it's like, okay, you have a mutation or something. But I'm not entirely sure what. Well, I'm entirely not sure, actually, why it's harder for rats. On a day-to-day basis, rats are just a lot stronger. Like, they can do a lot more damage to your equipment, and they will because they're rodents and they like to chew on stuff.
Now, to close up, because I don't want to go over time, I have a final question. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What's your favorite part about this work that you do?
So on a day-to-day basis, I just really like the rats. But the best thing is...
The baby rats?
The baby rats are extremely cute. But one of the best things is, you know, being able to look at an animal and see what's going on in the brain of that animal while it's doing that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, seeing certain things for the first time. Like, yeah, that's a general thing.
I completely agree. Yeah, that's also my favorite part.
When you, you know, make a discovery and you're like, okay, I may be the first person to see this.
Yeah, you're by yourself in the dark at night in a basement and you're thinking, no one else has seen this yet.
Yeah, and that makes it totally worth it. So
awesome.
That's very, very exciting.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. I think people are really going to enjoy hearing about your work. And if they do, where could they find you on the interwebs?
Easiest place to find me, I guess, is on Twitter. I'm at Susan Lemberg. Yeah, that's the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Okay.
As a postdoc, I'm a little bit in flux. So
people can send you pictures of cute rats and...
Oh, absolutely. Or ask me.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business
to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Questions about brains and other
awesome
things.
I hope they do that. Thanks so much for doing this interview, and I hope people learn something about teleportation.
Well, I hope so.
Thanks again to Dr. Lindberg for coming on the show. You can find me on Twitter at Ackermans Nicole, and you can catch Scientists in Tech next week when I talk to Dr. Georgi Trenchev about cleaning the air with plasma physics.